Hello. Morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Always enjoy the Bellwide meetings. It's a chance to see old friends and talk about cutting. And we've heard a lot over the last day and a half about issues that have to do with potential for profitability in the farming enterprise based on price projections and what have you. And I'm going to talk on a little bit more macro scale, maybe big picture if you want. The title is maybe a little bit misleading. A survey might imply that we actually surveyed something. It should be more of a review. I'll get into that in a second. I want to thank my co-authors. I also want to thank Jeannie Reeves, my guy that helps me out, Serini, my confidant, really was a slacker in this presentation. His wife had a baby, and he claimed that kept him from working. And so I let him slide, but he forgot to put Jeannie on this one, so I wanted to make sure she realized we appreciate her help. She's actually, the reason we did this piece was because if you've been to cotton meetings in the past, Beltwide, you would have heard us talk at the micro level about representative farm models and relative competition of production in cotton-producing countries around the world. We've been lucky enough to do this for many years, looking at starting in China and then moving around to India and Turkey and Greece and others. But we sort of ran out of the big players, and when you get into the smaller cotton producers and players, there's so many of them, it's difficult to try to do the same thing we did. So we said, well, what can we do to take a look at this without using the rep farm sort of rapid assessment methodology that we've been using? So what we tried to do was think about looking at the impact of competitive forces facing U.S. cotton in the framework of the Porter 5 analysis, which probably everybody's familiar with. It's borrowed from industrial organizations, structure, conduct, and performance type of work. And what we've done is tried to identify five forces that we think will be drivers in the competitiveness of the U.S. cotton sector in the longer run. We think of it in terms of the threat from the existing major importers such as India and Brazil, which we talk a lot about, and what happens in China. The threat from new entrants and smaller players, which is where our focus is today, West Africa and Central Asia. The threat from substitutes for cotton, which I'll get into in a little bit. And then you've got issues like the bargaining power and influence of big buyers like China, and the bargain powers of input suppliers that I think is sometimes overlooked in this. So if you put it in sort of a graphic context, this might bring it home a little bit better. We're basically trying to look at this in some context of what are the forces that are playing in the competition and the competitiveness of U.S. cotton, and how do they interact, because we know it's a system. I'll just back up a little bit and say that, you know, I like to see the young people coming up here and doing the reports, because I think it's telling that some of us need to begin to transition. When somebody comes up here and says they want a midterm forecast that goes to 2039, I'm here to tell you that's the end of the line for some of us. So it's not midterm at all, but it depends on how you look at it. So we're going to talk about some long-run things here. So what we did on this in this study, and what we're going to talk about today, is the smaller volume cotton producers. We have a whole body of things that we're trying to do, but with the time we had available today, we wanted to focus on just a few. So we really wanted to look at three main groups: Africa, focusing on the usual suspects; Central Asia, again, great lead-in for that, and we're lucky to have Steve in the back. He's done a really good piece on Uzbekistan policy. What was that, a couple of years ago? A really good piece. And then the other players, Pakistan, Greece, and Turkey. So we're going to look at the global cotton market and the role of smaller volume cotton produced. This is a wonderful graphic that I hope to be able to update at some point, but it really gives you a view of where cotton's being produced, how much, and across the globe. If we look at cotton production across the world, and we've pretty much covered this, so I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. But you get India, China, and the U.S. out of the way, and then it begins to get kind of messy in terms of who all's out there and who's playing and at what level. Pakistan, Brazil, Uzbekistan, Turkey, and then a host of other countries that produce cotton make up the majority of the rest of it. If we look at the major exporters, it becomes a little bit less messy. We've got the U.S., who's the major player for now and hopefully for the future as well. Brazil is always ripe with potential. Where it ends up in the future is hard to tell because of the competition with other commodities and opportunities. Australia struggling, I think, mightily with a water issue that may never be resolved. India, interesting case, lots of things there that retard their ability to get more and more involved in the export business, but we can talk about that. Uzbekistan, great discussion there about what you're going to or what you might see in terms of their role in this. And then you've got this host of other players in the rest of the world, which we're going to talk about in just a second. Let's talk about Africa. When you think about Africa, we hear about a relatively small portion of it, usually when we're talking about it, but 37 out of 55 countries in Africa produce cotton in some shape, form, or fashion. Mali, Egypt, Burkina Faso are the largest producers, and they're important crops to these countries. If you look at the GDP and their exports and the importance of them to these particular countries like Mali or Togo, cotton's a big deal for them. It is also a big deal in terms of rural employment, keeping people employed, busy, and generating income, which is solely, sometimes tied to agrarian pursuits. A lot of times that's cotton. If we look at the continent broadly, again, you can see first how many countries are producing, and then the sort of relative concentration in Burkina and Mali and Cote d'Ivoire and Cameroon. About 5.7, almost 5% of the world production is coming from Africa. If you look at the exports, though, it's about 13% of world exports. So they're playing in the export market at a fairly high level. Burkina again, Benin, Cameroon, Mali. We've become more aware as a result of the cotton case about Africa. I mean, I don't think it was on a lot of radars until they began to be the focus of issues that had to do with the World Trade Organization and things like that. And there's some strengths that they have. Its natural environment is suitable to growing cotton. Most upland cotton is above medium grade. It's got a very low cost of production compared with the rest of the world, or the world average anyway. And it has a large potential to increase in production because of a large amount of acreage that can come into production and a large potential for increases in yields. But then it suffers from all the problems that you see when you run around the developing country and look at cotton or basically all agriculture pursuits. The yields are low. It's rain-fed cultivation for the most part. Low skill levels in management. There's a lot of issues that have to do with the infrastructure that supports cotton, which is very important in terms of storage, to preserve the quality of the lint. They don't have a great international reputation in markets, and they don't do a lot of the value added that we see in some of the other developing countries that I'll talk about in just a second. But they do, again, have opportunities, particularly if you think about their proximity to the EU markets, the intervention of the NGOs, particularly from Europe, trying to promote cotton as an opportunity for rural development. You've got some reduction in subsidies which might make them more competitive in the world as we move forward. So there's a lot of opportunities as well. I'm going to have to move faster, I guess. If you move to Central Asia, I think we've had a good discussion about that, so I'll fly through this. But again, it constitutes about 5% of the global output. Uzbekistan is the major player. And again, it's pretty important. It's about 10% of their exports. But again, it's declined from where it was before in the centrally planned world of the Soviet Union, which is a distant past now. If you look at exports and production, you can see the role of Uzbekistan in both cases, and you can see, you can pronounce that, I won't. But you can see the relative roles of the countries in Central Asia. Again, about 5.2% of the production and about 10% of the world's exports. There's a lot of policy problems in Central Asia, or issues, I suppose. The state control and procurement of cotton, land ownership in the hands of government, import subsidies for cotton farmers, expansion of infrastructure, trying to expand the cultivation, and the development of ginning and processing industries. There's a lot of policy issues that are trying to lead to helping the cotton industry develop in Central Asia. But at the same time, there's other issues that would point to a difficulty in terms of achieving that goal. It was mentioned earlier about 60% of the water diverted never reaches the field for irrigation. So we're trying to irrigate without water getting to be available. And there it's inefficiency in California. There just ain't no water. Deterioration of soil and water quality because of the extensive use of chemicals, and on and on. The one thing I don't think was mentioned was the indirect taxation element, which is a national policy that has to do with foreign exchange rate conversions. And again, that's, if you want to know more about that, you can go to Steve's piece. He does a good job on that. And again, there's policies that interfere with the competitive forces in the market. Government or preferred buyer systems, limited amount of competition for the cotton that's being produced. Again, there's also opportunities, like we've said. You know, you've got somebody said, I think yesterday, it says it depends sort of thing. So there's, you know, things are moving in the right direction. There's economic reforms going on. The private sector is becoming larger, or playing a larger role. So the path of development for Central Asia is, I think, is there. The role that cotton will play in the individual countries will be determined later. It's hard for us to really get a good handle on it. I think the relative comparison of wheat to cotton in Uzbekistan is a very interesting thing to follow up on. In Pakistan, it's really a large producer of cotton, but it's also a large user. It's a net importer. It continues to be a growing source of potential markets for imports because of their growing textile industry. In addition, it speaks to the opportunity for high-quality cotton exports. If we look at the trade, you can see the imports beginning to increase even as their production's increased, and again, it's because of the expansion of the use of that in the production of those textiles. A lot of that increase in demand, again, is coming from the EU, which provides duty-free imports to those textiles. You've got a Pakistani government that's trying to stimulate that free trade in order to capture the benefits of their value-added textile industry. There are some delays in the development of the production side because of BT cotton and other GM varieties are being sort of restricted, which may or may not relax in the coming years. But I think they still have a lot of potential, particularly for our Pima and long staple cotton, as they increase the demand for that high-quality cotton to go into their textile exports to the EU. They've got other problems with diseases and infrastructure like most of the developing countries that we work with. I won't spend any time on Turkey and Greece. If you want to know more about them, I'd go back to the previous Beltwide meetings. We've done some work in both these countries at the farm level, and I think you'll enjoy it. So In conclusion, I think cotton from Africa has a great potential to play a much bigger role in global markets as yields are yet to catch up with global market averages due to high quality cotton fiber and low cost production. Cotton in Central Asia can certainly improve its standing in the global markets, but how it moves forward is going to be dependent on a lot of policy, a lot of issues that have to do with the infrastructure and what have you. And the scope for other players like Pakistan can also improve, but I think in the near term, we can see Pakistan as an opportunity, perhaps more than a threat. But I want to conclude with really where we're going with this study has to do with the fact that when you look at all of this in a sort of a macro sense or a big picture sense, all the things that we've done in terms of what's the competition from Brazil, what's the competition from Australia, may really be, it's interesting, important, but we may be missing something. And I think it's the substitutes for cotton. I think as economists, we may want to take some of our time to start to think about what's the long-run role of cotton in the world textile industry. I mean, you've seen a lot of information over the last day and a half about where our share is, but, you know, I think the industry itself, if you, and I put this up here because I don't want to be attributed to having said this, I want to be able to get out of San Antonio without any difficulty. So we know that there's an industry effort, a joint effort by the Australians and the U.S., to really take a hard look to promote the benefits of natural cotton and try to tackle this issue of synthetic fibers head on. And if you look at the demand for it, it's hard to deny the fact that we seem to be slipping in terms of man-made fibers versus demand for cotton. A lot of it has to do with the variable uses of this stuff in terms of just all sorts of things, not only the apparel industry, but as you mentioned, for cotton, it's what by far the largest sector of what we're consuming. But then if you go into the Sports Authority, for example, or Dick's Sporting Goods, and you go in the golf shop, you can't find 100% Izod cotton shirt anymore. It's all self-wicking, cool breeze, nano fabrics and stuff, and that's what 10 years from now, who knows what we're going to be facing. You know, you put nano products in there, you tear it repairs itself sort of stuff. So I think we've got an issue to deal with that we need to think outside the box a little bit about. This, again, was their statement, not mine, but the U.S. cotton farmers' competition is not the Australian cotton farmer, not the Brazilian or Pakistani cotton farmer. It's a synthetic fiber producer. I think that's really a strong statement, but it's something that we need to put into our wheelhouse in terms of our thoughts as we go forward. We need to deliver innovation in cotton, new ideas, new products, and new technology. And I think we've got an issue with what it is we're selling. If you look at some of the things that we put out there, what's the message we're really putting out there in terms of trying to sell a high-quality product? Maybe we need to think about looking at some marketing studies from an economist's point of view. The other thing is, I think, you know, if you roll all of what I'm trying to say into one package, I think it's, you know, the drivers for the future are going to be striving to produce high-quality cotton at competitive prices, reliable shipping, good customer relations, convince consumers of the responsible way cotton is produced. I think you saw two or three examples of that earlier, the evidence of reduction in environmental damage related to changes in cotton production technology. You saw some things about variable rate technology and how it reduces chemical use. And then you saw some work by George and others on putting out that message that cotton's really a family farm sort of thing. This marketing what we are as opposed to what we're perceived to be and developing some sort of consistent message. So we're going to continue to take a look at that or try, and we're going to look at this threat on substitutes, and then we're also going to look at the bargaining power of buyers and suppliers in the next year. So we'll probably be back next year and hopefully be able to talk a little bit more about what we're trying to think about now. So thanks. I went over a little bit, but we got time for questions or comments, if there's any. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.